Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi. Meseches Menachos Daf Samach Vav. We begin on Samach Yomi Beis, on the very last line, right in the middle of our discussion. How do we prove that in fact, when the Torah says you begin counting Sfiras Omer, when you bring the Omer, it's meant to be Mimachras HaShabbos. You start counting from the morrow of Shabbos. Now, is Shabbos the regular weekly Shabbos? So you mean that you have to start counting on a Sunday only? That's what the Tzedukim held. That's what the Bais Susim held. But the Chachamim and the true interpretation of the Pasuk is Shabbos. Well, in this case, it means Yom Tov. Which Yom Tov? The first day of Pesach. Shabbos, Shabbosim, the day of rest, the day of celebration. And that's when we bring the Omer, that's when we begin the countdown, or count up, to Shavuos, which is exactly 7 weeks later. Again, not necessarily going to fall out on a Sunday, rather 50 days after the launching of the Sfiras Omer, which begins on any day of the week, it's a Pesach-dependent count, so the day following, the first day of Pesach. What are our sources? So we had one Braisa. Just briefly, we have Rechon Ben Zakkai. He says, here we speak about counting days, then we speak about counting weeks, 4 weeks. Apparently, there are two ways to count. If you start on a Sunday, if it so happens, then it's going to be a week type of count. You've got to count 7 weeks. If you start on a Wednesday, then it's about days, not about weeks. Apparently, it's not Sunday related. Next point was Rebbe Eliezer. It's a Bezdin related issue, and that relates to Yom Tov, which is established by the Bezdin. Rabbi Yeshua, he says that the launch date of the Sfira must be discernible, clearly discernible, when you meant to start, based on the previous day, which is day 15 of Nisan, rather than just a random Sunday in Nisan, which can end up being any day of the calendar. Then we have Rabbi Shmuel, who says we compare the Karbanis, the Omer on Pesach, to the Shtei Lechem al Atzeres, both at the beginning of a Yom Tov, rather than somewhere, randomly in the middle. Rabbi Yehuda Seira says, likewise, we connect the Shabbos, which is attached to the Omer, Machras HaShabbos, and Shabbos, which is attached to the Shtei Lechem, to Atzeres, and just like over there, it's the beginning of the Yom Tov here as well, it relates to the beginning of Pesach. That was yesterday's discussion in the first Braisa. Now we began a second Braisa. So we had Rabbi Yehuda Ben Seira, who says it has to be a consistent 50-day count between Pesach and Shavuos, and if it's going to be anything other than the day after Pesach that you begin, it could end up being all kinds of different numbers. Okay, so we begin Rabbi Yehuda Ben Seira on the bottom line. He says, Omer ain't a tzarech, we don't need that. So we have another source. Harry Omer, listen to this source. Tispalacha, this is very similar to the Russia we had a minute ago in the first Braisa. You, the supreme authority in Klal Yisrael, the Sanhedrin HaGadol, you're in charge. Sfirat Tlu Yibbezn. The count of the Omer is connected to you, the Bezn, who establishes the Chadashim, the Yamim Tovim, and you can dictate when this count begins. The Yatzah Shabbos Bereish, as opposed to learning literally that Machzor Shabbos means on Sunday, well, that's not Bezn related. Shabbos is anybody's business. Sfirasa B'chalodim, anybody can determine when to count. You start on a Sunday. It's pretty obvious. Apparently, it's not Sunday. Rather, it's the day after Pesach. Reisi Omer. Another source, Machas HaShabbos, is Machas Yom Tov, day after Yom Tov. Ato Omer, you're claiming Machas Yom Tov. Perhaps it means literally Machas Shabbos. Reishis, the tomorrow after a regular Shabbos, Sunday. Amras, the answer is like this. Well, V'chi Nemer Machas HaShabbos Shabbosecha Pesach. Well, then you're not going to know when it is. Maybe it's Parshas Toldos or something, right? Does it say the morrow of Shabbos during Pesach? Well, hell of Machas HaShabbos. It just says after Shabbos. Which Shabbos? B'chol Hashana Kula Melech Shabbos. You have full choice of Shabbos throughout the year. Say B'day Kezoy Shabbos. How are you going to figure out which one? Apparently, that's not a way to go. It's not defined, not identifiable. V'oid. Now, apparently, he wasn't really happy with this source. He came up with another source. And that's by way of connecting through Gzera Shabba. Nemra Shabbos Lamat. We have to turn Shabbos downstairs by the Atzeres, the Yom Tov Shavuos. It says, Ad Mimachras HaShabbos HaShviz. V'nemer Shabbos l'malo, it says Shabbos upstairs by the Omer, right? B'machos HaShabbos. We connect. Malahan, just like over there by Shavuos, it's regular, tchilas regular. It's something of an event taking place on the Yom Tov, at the beginning of the Yom Tov. Afkan here as well. Sviras Omer connects to the beginning of, it's during the Pesach, and the beginning, at the beginning, following the first day of Yom Tov. Afkan, regular, tchilas regular. So clearly, it's not Shabbos related, rather it's Pesach related. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, has an interesting source like this. Kosev Echad Omer, regarding eating matzah, listen to this. He says, we have a difference in the way the Torah presents the duration of the Achilas Matzah. Here it says, Shesh Yom Teichel Matzah, it's eat for 6 days. Kosev Echad Omer, other passage says, eat for 7 days. Shivas Yom Matzah Teichel HaKeitzah. How do we reconcile this? Of course, we eat matzah as opposed to chametz all 7 days. But there's a difference between the last six and the first day. On the first day, you eat only from the old crop. But starting from second day onward, when the Omer is brought, that opens the door to the new crop. So it's a different type of supply. Okay, so how do you work this out? Matzah. The matzah which you cannot source from the new crop all 7 days. On the first day, it's Asra. It's still pre-Omer, which allows the new crop. But for the next 6 days you could. So clearly the Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach, which opens the door to the new crop. Okay, once we're on this topic, the Gemara will now analyze the entire Pasuk. So the Pasuk reads like this. You begin counting. From the day that you bring the Omer. Okay, Miyami Aviyachem would tell you, at this point you start counting from that. Perhaps the Torah is telling you, look, the count follows the bringing of the Omer. So you bring it today, and any time onward, you're okay for Sfira. You don't have to start today. Tamalayma Pasuk says, no, Mehochel Cheremesh, come with a Chemesh, the sickle begins striking at the standing grain. Tochel Isper, that's when you begin counting. So it's synonymous with the actual bringing of the Omer. Well, not necessarily the bringing, perhaps the harvesting. If only from that pasuk, techelisper, you begin to count when you start harvesting. Perhaps you go like this: you harvest, begin counting. And in terms of bringing the Omer, it's up to you. So yeah, we can bring it later on. No, the Omer is counted from the time of being, the day of offering the Omer. Says the one, okay, let's go to the other extreme. In fact, you're going to dwell on that pasuk. Perhaps this is the way to do it. You do all three during the day. You cut, you count, and you bring. No, Sheva Shabbos is Tmimas Tiyan. It's meant to be full 7 weeks. If you start counting during daytime, you're missing. You haven't really included the previous night. How do you get full? 7 full weeks, full days? It's only if you start counting. As soon as the night time arrives, so you start counting, you get the next 24 hours into your account. It's a full full count. Okay, so in that case, so perhaps you do it all at night. Right? Harvest. You bring the Omer to the Beis HaMikdash and you start counting. The actual offering takes place by day. Okay, so how do you work this out? To accommodate all aspects of the pasuk, the answer is tzira u'sefira balayla. You harvest, as we explained in the previous Mishnah, and you start counting at night, as we do today, right? But the actual offering is during the next day. Amar Rava. We take a look at the two brises with the multiple sources to prove that the Omer event takes place the day following the first day of Pesach. Kulu islu pircha. Really, you know, you can counter all of them. You can sort of refute them. Bar mitarti tanoi basrai, except for the last two presentations by the two tanoim and the previous bride, and the bein b'masnisa kamai, so whether in the first bride, the last two over there, bein b'masnisa basrai, so likewise the last two proofs of the second bride. That's lupircha, those cannot be refuted. So those were actually the in the first price that we have, we connect the term Shabbos over here to Shabbos over there. They're both on Yom Tov, not just a random Sunday. And then we have, we connect the Karbonis, the Omer Tadish De'alechem, which take place during the Yom Tov, beginning of the Yom Tov. Okay, that was in the first Braisa. And likewise, in the last Braisa, we have again the Shabbos Kseder Shavah from a different Tana, actually, and we have the Raya from the Matzis. Those are irrefutable proofs. And now he's going to go back and see how you can sort of challenge the other ones. Im Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, which was the first one, when he debated the Zakkai in Echon, he says, look, it's contradictory. Here it says 15 days, here it says 7 weeks. And apparently the answer is, when it happens to start on a Sunday, it can happen, right? Shabbos, Pesach is Shabbos, then you have a weekly count, weekly units. If it's on a different day of the week, then it's a daily count, it's 50 days. That was his proof that, in fact, it's not Sunday-related, right? Well, Dilmuk Abaye, that could be understood differently. As Abaye says, Amar Abaye, that the Pasuk actually is telling us that you need to incorporate two elements of counting into your count. You count the days and you count the weeks. It's not a contradiction. Mitzvah l'mim ne'yami, mitzvah l'mim ne'shivu, you count days and weeks, as we do today, right? 14 days, 2 weeks, right? So that doesn't necessarily prove anything regarding the starting point. Even the Rav Lezer, Rabbi Shua. What about the next Raya of Lezer? That it's a Bezdin related count. It relates to Yom Tov. And Rabbi Shua says that you have to have a established identifiable starting point. Well, Mimai the Yom Tov Rishon Koyi, fine. But who says the morrow of the first day of Pesach, then will be on to Achron Koyi, perhaps the morrow of the last day of Pesach. So again, that's not firmly conclusive. And further down the line, we have the Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Seira, Les Lupercha, those cannot be refuted. Okay, that takes care of the first price. Let's move on to the second price. Imdu Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda, who was the start of the second Braisa, that there has to be consistently 50 days between Pesach and Shavuos. Well, and the point was, because suppose it so happens that you start counting on a Sunday, okay, let's say Pesach is on a Shabbos, then it's exactly 50 days between Pesach and Shavuos. And it has to stay that way consistently, because, right, so if you insist, but if you insist on always starting on a Sunday, so let's say Pesach falls out on a Wednesday, the previous Wednesday, you're going to have a couple of days extra between Pesach and Shavuos, different than last year, right? Well, that can be addressed as follows. I can suggest that 50 means, aside from those extra days, there's always going to be a 50-day gap between Pesach and Shavuos, fine, but sometimes you can have a bit more depending on the way it falls out in the week. So that's not really conclusive. Even the Rebbe Maseira, that was again today's beginning of today's learning, that it's Tisbar Lach, the counting is connected to the Bezdin, relates to Yom Tov. Again, so which Yom Tov? Maybe the last day of Pesach. Maybe the Yom Tov Rishon Koyi, the Yom Tov Achim, perhaps it relates to the last day of Yom Tov. Okay, the next on the list, Rabbi Yasi. Rabbi Yasi Nami Chazle Pircha, if you recall, Rabbi Yasi himself seemed to question his first source, which was that it cannot be a regular Shabbos, because then how do you know which Shabbos in the year? It must be Pesach. But that's a bit problematic, since we still don't know, is it the beginning of the Pesach or the last day of Pesach? So that's why he came up with another source, which was that we connect the Shabbos of Sfiras HaOmer with the Shabbos of Shavuos, and they both have to be on the Yom Tov, the beginning of the Yom Tov, and that's a conclusive Raya. Gufa, let's go back to Amar Abaye regarding the format of Sfiras HaOmer. It must encompass days and weeks. Amar Abaye, mitzvah l'mimne yayne, or mitzvah l'mimne shavu, we count days and weeks as we do today. Rabban and the Reb Ashi, however, they conformed with this system. Amemer, however, count the days but not weeks. Omar, he says, nowadays it's not really fully obligatory, right? It's only midrabbanon. Omar, it's only midrabbanon to recall the process of the Beis Hamikdash, the Omer, so it's enough to relate to days. You don't have to elaborate and have both components. Okay, so we spoke about the timing of the Omer. Now let's proceed with the process itself. Says the Mishnah. They harvested the barley, placed them in baskets. They came to the Beis HaMikdash. They would char it, they would roast it on the fire. So while in the baskets, while in the container, so they would actually hold, they would hold the stalks with the barley within it over the fire and roast it that way. Okay, so as per the pasuk says like this: you take the v'imtakriv minchas bikurim l'Hashem, aviv, okay, the fresh new crop, koli ba'esh, roasted in fire, geres, means crushed, not really finely ground, but crushed, karmel, means rach, malay, means soft, plump, fresh and moist, takriv es minchas bikurech. Okay, so they roasted to be makayim mitzvahs koli, as per the pasuk koli ba'esh, divrei chachamim. They learn that it's meant to be done a bit differently than Rameir described it. First they sort of separate the actual kernel from its husk a little bit. They strike at it with konim, with reeds, with a cabbage pieces, or like firm but not too heavy, not too hard. They strike at the grain to separate it from its husk, from its skin, so that they don't crush it. And then, right, because it's soft and mush, so they do a slight, and then they put it into a nasnula ovav. They place it into a container. Rashi says it's a klishal nechosh, a copper container, which is perforated like a sieve. Vavav hayimanukav, it was perforated. Shehiya urshel, because the fire would reach the entire content, and that's how it would roast. So it wasn't outright on the fire; it was placed in this container, and that's how it was. Shatchu v'azor. After they finished this process, they would lay it out in the azara to dry up. Varuch min hashavas boy, and the wind would blow through it and dry it up. Nesnul berachaim shel gerosis. They placed it into a mill, a bean mill, not a regular flour mill, which is like a slight sort of crush, for concern that it would because that's the pasuk. The pasuk calls it geres. Rashi says geres karmel. It's not meant to be finely ground. It's meant to be sort of broken apart, but not too heavy, not too intense. Vayitzu mimenu isorin, and then they extracted an isorin amount of this flaky material, shumanupa b'shalosh esrin nafa, which was sifted through 13 sifters to get a real proper high quality product. Vashar niftav nechalod, and the rest you redeem and you sell it off. You anybody could have it. V'chay b'chalo potom ben amaser. Now, when the customer takes that material and turns it into a dough, at that point, the chiv of chala gets activated. He has to give the kayin. But maser, potom ben amaser, exempt from maser, because it was under the ownership of the bezin when the grain was sort of completed, when it went through the gemar malacha, when it was harvested and completed. So at that point, the chi of maser would kick in, but it's under the auspices of the hekdesh, which is potter from maser. So that once that exemption gets applied, it stays. So chala yet, but maser no. Rabbi Akiva, however, machayv b'chala b'maser. He says, just as you chayv in chala after purchasing from the bezin, from the hekdesh, you chayv in maser as well. The reason will be discussed in the gemar. Turn around, let's go to the pasuk that we read through before and analyze it word by word. So the pasuk says aviv. Ze aviv. Rashi says kolayim reishis kotzer, right? The first harvest, the fresh new crop. Kolo beish means malam shay yisrael mahavim benoise beish. They would char it. They would slightly roast it. Kolayim b'mitzvas kali, in fulfillment of the mitzvah of kali. Rameir chamaimrim. You don't hold it out, over the fire. Ein oir lashem kali. So your description of hivah bar, that you hold it over the fire directly, that's not what the term means. The term kali typically does not refer to outright roasting, eladavar achar, rather only if it's placed in a kli, in a container. That's how it's placed on the, that's called kali, that's the heat, the whole arrangement, that is what's properly described as kali. Okay. Some say Lishna Achrina, there's another version of this. Ein Loshen Kali El Davar Kolo. That the Loshen Kali refers to the Kli, the container which is Kolo, shiny, right? Glistening. Which is this this Kli that's used. So according to them, it's meant to be contained in this Kli, and that's how it's roasted. Okay, it's that. So how do you go about this? Above shall kloyus ayusham, right? There was this roasting container, perforated like a sieve, k'deshiyahur, shalatas bekulos, that the fire would reach all its content, and that's how it gets roasted. The pasuk continues, aviv kali geras, right? It says aviv kali be'esh geras karmel. Now, we're not really sure how it's roasted. Is it roasted in its original format, as a full grain, or is it roasted as a geras, as ready post-crushing? Right, so the Lashon Kali can go back to Aviv, in its original format, in its grain form, and it can go further to geras, which is post-crushing. Which way is it? Any day, I'm not sure. Im Aviv Kali, Im Geras Kali. Is it roasted in its Aviv stage or geras stage? But the word Eish comes in between. It says, Aviv Kali Ba'esh Geras Karmel. So the word Ba'esh gets in between the word Kali and Geras. So clearly it's going back Aviv Kali Ba'esh, that it's roasted as Aviv. And they roast it before it is ground. Further, Karmel in the Pasuk means Rachomol. We learn it as Rachomol. It's a joint word. It's Rach, soft, moist, umol, and it could be, you know, applied between the fingers. It's soft and pliable, still nice and fresh. And the Gemara will bring us a listing of other locations in Tanakh where we find this type of joint word type of thing. It's one word which is indicative of a couple of b'chinu oimer. Likewise, we find in Malachim, Bishbam, Bal Shalisha, Vayavel Shalikim, Lechem, Bikurim, Vesem, Lechem, Shairim, Makarma, Bitsi, Kloy, Noi. Vayamin, he says, Tain Lama Yechelu here. Here's an offering of fruit, go enjoy. The word Bitsi, Kloy, Noi has a deeper meaning. Bob, Yatzak, he poured, he came and he poured, he offered us this food, Lano, Bachalnu, and we ate Venavel, and it was great. It was tasty, it was good, it was satiating. So Bitsi, Kloy, Noi is this joint word. Yatzak, Lanu, we have another an example of a joint comprised word. This is a Mishle regarding sinners. Nisalsa b'ahavim. The Lashon Nisalsa means nisa v'nitein v'nala v'nismach, will interact and sin and will enjoy. Nischate b'ahavim, will have this sinful experience. So Nisalsa again is a joint word. V'aymer, another example, knaf renanim ne'alasa. This is a bird which carries up its egg. Ne'alasa means noisei. Oylev in eschate, he carries, he lifts it, and then puts it down in the nest or whatever. Vayimer, and one final example is by Bilam. What's the donkey stopping midway? Says the Malach, he yorat. What does yorat mean? Yorat anerach negdi. Look, why are you complaining on your reisa? The donkey saw and was gripped with fear, and therefore rasa not so, because she saw and she's straight off the path because of me. So yorat means yora. The Reisa, Ra'asa, Natsa, I think Rashi and Chumash brings it. The Rebbe Shmuel Tana, one final example is our Gemara. Karmel means Karmel, Karmel. So the kernel is filled, it's like a Karmel, it's like a pillow, a stuffed pillow which is filled with its content. Likewise, this nice looking fresh piece of grain which is offered by the Omer. Okay, the Mishnah continues. What about the leftover material that's given out, sold, and the customer who processes that material, turns it into a dough, has to do the challah process, but not meiser, because challah gets activated, gets triggered when you make that dough, but and that's happening under his auspices. But the maser chiyuv that came about when it was when the actual grain was processed, it's called miruach. When they pile it up, they smooth out the pile, that's considered having turned it into grain. That happened when it was under the control of the Gizbra, of the Hegdash caretaker, owned by the Hegdash, and that's Pater from Masra, Rav Kahana. Why does Rabbi Kiva apply a Chiyuv Masra in this case? I'm here Rabbi Kiva, because he would say, nothing doing. He holds that even when grain was processed by the Hegdash, under the Hegdash ownership, it's not Pater. Masra of Shesh should have a question on Rav Kahana's explanation. If so, if it is true that according to Rav Kiva, miruach, the finishing, the processing of the grain by Hegdash, under Hegdash ownership, does not exempt give it an exempt status from Maser, how you going to understand the next price, which actually discusses the leftovers of the Omer? Maser sholish sinan lo mayosin by. What would do the leftovers of the three saw? They started with a huge amount, and they only needed a saw. What happens to the leftovers? Okay, nifta, they would redeem it, transfer the kedusha onto money, basically sell it out, and anybody could have a rechel otam. What about its status? V'chayev b'chal apotam and amasrus. Okay, chal yes, master no. That's the chacham. Okay, v'chayev b'chal amasrus. He says v'chayev b'chal and amasrus. Amrloi, chachamim countered him and said, look, why are you obligating him in master? Poidim yad gidru yachiyach. Look, classic case where a person is poida, redeems, obtains material from the gizbra, from the caretaker. That will prove our point and disprove yours. Shechayev b'chal, although chala is chayev because the dough was generated under the customer's care, but upatam and amasra is no chayev master. So why is this different? Now, what do you mean, why is this different? Your notion, your starting point, your position is exactly the point of dispute. You're proving your case from your case. Of course we know that's your position. Rabbi Kiva is known to disagree with this point according to Rav Kahana's explanation. He also is chayev on maser for something which was processed under the Gisbert care, right? So how could you, how could you be making your point from an opinion which he himself disputes? Ravi Misa, if it's true, the Miruach Hegdash ain't a point, the Rekiva's opinion is that Miruach Hegdash does not exempt the product. Mike Amrali, so what kind of argument is this? His position is consistent in both cases. Leftover of the Omer, leftover anything that's purchased from the Hegdash. In both cases, he maintains that it's Chayv and Miruach. It's Chayv and Maser. Void, furthermore, another question on this approach. Eisver of Kahana, Bar Tachlifi, he asked the question of Kahana. You're telling me that according to Rekiva, Miruach of Hegdash is still Chayv and Maser? Rekiva, Machayv, Bechala, Uba Maseris. Rekiva himself explained his position. You know why Maser applies to the leftovers? Because initially when they paid, when they gave the mois, when they bought the product, the intent was only for what they need. They never purchased the leftovers. It never belonged to Hegdash. So whatever turns out to be leftovers was never really Hegdash owned. It's ordinary material, which is Chayv HaMaser. Let me explain to Rabbi Kiva's position. It's exactly as such. Talmud Aruchu, Rabbi Kiva had a clear tradition that he would express from his Rebbe, Shalai Nitnu Mois, Ella Letzerech Lehen, exactly as he explains in the Braisa, the leftovers were never purchased, were never owned by Hegdash. And that's why it's Chayv and Maser. Continues the Gemara, Amar Rav Pshitali, it's clear to me that the Miruach Hegdash Poiter. Generally, Miruach of Hegdash, again, Miruach is the finishing touch, right, when they smooth out the pile of grain, that grants it the grain status, labels it as grain, as complete. If it happened under the Hegdash's ownership, it's Poiter. It exempts it from further Chiv of Maser. And even Rabbi Kiva agrees to that, as he explained. If you're Rabbi Kiva like Omar, like a Machayv Hosam. The only reason why Rabbi Kiva obligates the leftovers of Maser, as we explained, because it never was owned by Hegdash. Retroactively, it was discovered this was really out of the picture. Of course, the Miruach that takes place under Hegdash's ownership, of course it exempts. That's a given. What about Miruach of a Goy? Goy owned, produce. Miruach of Gichom Tanoyim, Machlokes Tanoyim, and really revolves around the general question whether Goy's input regarding Eretz Yisrael grown grain has any impact. Do we say the Kedusha is still there or not? The Sani Bava Braisa, which discusses this very point, Termin, Mishal Yisrael, Ashal Yisrael, you have two piles of grain or whatever. You can take off Truma from one to accommodate the other. If they're both of equal status, they're both owned by a Yid, both Chayev. You can do one on the other. Umishel Shalev Gicham, or the guys on the guys. Umishel Kusim Ashal Kusim. Kusim were fellows that had a problematic experience, a conversion experience. In that case, it doesn't matter. Because even their grown, their product that they grow, that they own, is still chayiv. Umishel Kol Ashal Kol. You can mix and match. You can take a truma from the Yisrael on the guys thing, and vice versa. The very big, because going to their mayor. Ownership is irrelevant. Eretz Yisrael grown grain is chayiv and master. However, Rabbi Shimon Omer, they disagree. Only ones grown by owned by a yid. Termin Mishal Yisrael, Shal Yisrael. You can do Yisrael and Yisrael. Umishal Oiv Gicham Ashal Oiv Kusim. Umishal Kusim Ashal Oiv Gichavim. Avaloi Mishal Yisrael Ashal Oiv Gichavim. Mishal Kusim. Avaloi Mishal Oiv Gicham Ashal Kusim Ashal Yisrael. He says like this. Only grain which was processed by a yid is chayiv min ha-Torah. Right? So you could do Yisrael and Yisrael, but otherwise you're going to be running into an issue of chayiv on potter. You're going to take a Yisrael's grain and do truma on the guy's grain, which is potter. That's not going to work. So you can do Yisrael and Yisrael. Or if you choose to do goy on goy or kusi on kusi, that's fine because they're both potter, so there's no harm done. But you can't mix and match, because according to this opinion, only the grain which was processed by Yisrael is chayev in maser, but not otherwise. So what's a clear machlekes? We'll continue with Hashem tomorrow regarding chiyuv of chalo in terms of ownership, bezus Hashem. Okay, so bottom line is, we had multiple proofs regarding the dating of the mechas omer, the day following first day of Pesach. We learned about the counting of Sfiras Omer, which is something everybody does, right? Sfaratim Lochem, and you incorporate Yoimim and Shavuim as well, according to Abaye. We learned about the process of harvesting and roasting the Omer material. We had a listing of nutricons, these comprised these joint words. Interesting, and then we had machlekes regarding leftovers, leftover material of the Omer, whether it's chayiv and maser. Ultimately, it turns out that Rabbi Kiva's chiyuv is because it was never really hekdesh on, because lo nitnu mois ela l'tzerech lehen. All the best to you and atzlacha.